Hello and welcome to a live NBA outlet. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron, regular guest on the show, Jack Manuel. How we doing, fellas?
It is 90 degrees. I did the conversion, and I'm wearing a tank top. Why not?
I'm so pumped for this show that I'm like ripping out. I'm just ready for this podcast.
Sun's out, guns out. Here we go, ready to dive into this. A little birthday edition. Was my birthday yesterday. Corey's going to take over host, you know, came up with a lot of topics for the show. Before I pass it over to him, quick reminder, check us out, iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. All you, Corey.
First off, happy birthday, Nick. Thank you for all that you do for the site, all the countless hours you're putting in behind the scenes. We wouldn't be able to do what we do without you doing what you do. And then, of course, now, Jack, again, welcome, brother. First up, we got to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks because they made the two biggest moves today. Well, probably like the only moves that we really heard about today. First, they're expected to sign Pau Gasol, who was bought out. So we'll talk about that first. What do you guys think about the Milwaukee Bucks bringing in Pau Gasol?
It's all right. I just don't understand what his role is going to be. I mean, I get that he probably, for him, it's a motivation to be part of something what could be pretty special, you know, sort of 2014-15 Golden State Warriors sort of thing, you know, a team out of nowhere rising from, you know, obscurity, you know, off the back of Giannis Antetokounmpo. But I don't know what role he's going to play, and I don't want to see him take away minutes from guys like, you know, DJ Wilson, these sort of players who I think add real value. And whereas Gasol, in terms of the pace and space system that they play, and especially defensively, I don't think he adds much. So if he's there as a sort of veteran sort of piece, you know, a la Jared Dudley, play a few minutes here and there, and then sort of just give them the motivation and knowledge of what it takes in the playoffs and to get that success, possibly even a championship, then I think his role will be valuable.
Yeah, I agree with Jack. I think veteran presence, you know, obviously winning a championship, having that experience can bring it to a young team that necessarily hasn't done that. You know, they've been in the first round, but not in a deep playoff run. I think looking at the roster as well, they don't necessarily have a true backup center. So he's somebody who could come in if, let's say, Brook Lopez were to get into foul trouble and they really want to put somebody in there who's actually 7 foot and not play Mirotic or, you know, Giannis at the five. It gives them an emergency big to have, but I wouldn't expect big minutes. I think it's more of a veteran thing, like Jack said, and being a part of something. And it'd be pretty cool if he got to match up with his brother in the conference finals.
You know, I saw earlier today that they were interested in possibly going after Marcin Gortat. So, but if you're looking at the Bucks and you're signing either Gortat or Pau Gasol, was getting Gasol the right guy to get between those two?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah, he fits their scheme a little bit more too. Like, Gasol's not an amazing three-point shooter, but he can shoot out there. And I think his veteran presence is a little bit better than Gortat, who was known for a couple years ago criticizing his own bench, saying they're the worst in the league. I don't think you necessarily want that with your squad. I think Gasol's a proven guy and can really bring something to that locker room.
Yeah, I'm right there with you guys. I don't think Gasol plays a ton of minutes, like probably like 12 minutes a game, if that, maybe 15 if they really get in foul trouble. But he's really just there for the fact that he's been, you know, he's got two titles. He's been to the highest stage. So he's going to help, because I don't think they have any other guys on this team who've won a title. I think he's the first guy who's actually been that far. And then following that, they just re-signed Eric Bledsoe to a 4-year, $70 million deal. I, for one, am kind of shocked that it's $70 million. I feel like he was kind of playing his way into a bigger contract. Obviously, he wanted to stay with Milwaukee. Milwaukee wanted to keep him. What are some of your guys' takeaways from 29-year-old Eric Bledsoe now being a Milwaukee Buck for the next 4 years?
I actually think that this is one of those deals that could be beneficial for both parties. You know, I'm always going to compare it to the Nets, but it sort of reminds me of Spencer Dinwiddie in the fact that it's a deal that gives him some security, gets him that paper, but at the same time gives the Bucks some flexibility, because this could be a tradable contract if they wanted to, you know, somehow get rid of him. How it affects Malcolm Brogdon and Chris Middleton to me and their free agency in July is going to be very interesting. So, but I think that it's a win-win for both parties. And maybe Eric Bledsoe took some unders to sort of be part of something special, but he fits perfectly in Milwaukee, and he does want to be there.
Yeah, I think it's a fair contract. I mean, it's 4 years. Bledsoe's 29 years old. He's an athletic guard who depends on his athleticism. So as he ages, it might not be the most amazing contract, but it makes it a lot easier for the Bucks in free agency. Now they know they have Bledsoe locked up. You know, if they were to lose Brogdon, it would suck, but at least they know they have one of their guards. They can focus on Middleton or Brook Lopez. So it kind of just gives them some insurance, and it kind of has another guy that kind of buys into that Bucks team and makes Giannis probably feel a little bit more comfortable having a guard he likes to play with.
Yeah, I mean, I love the position that Milwaukee's in. You make a great point, Jack. with how they're going to handle the Middleton and Brogdon free agency. I think Middleton, without a doubt, they want to bring him back. They're going to bring him back. And I think Brogdon's a restricted free agent, right? So they can match any deal and go over the cap if they really wanted to. Something noted, I do know that Eric Bledsoe was making, I think, more or less money than Miles Turner, which is interesting. But that's just a little fun tidbit.
He's older, you know what I mean? And he's had an injury history, you know what I mean? He's missed plenty of time.
Do you guys think that John Horst should be in the running for the Executive of the Year?
Yes.
And this is via our boy, Kane Pittman, who appeared on the preview for the Milwaukee Bucks. He, you know, hired Mike Budenholzer, signed Brook Lopez, traded Delian Henson, traded Thon Maker for Nikola Mirotic, signed Pau Gasol, and that got Bledsoe on that four-year, $70 million deal that we've been talking about. So he's got to be up there.
Yeah, I think bringing Coach Bud and Brook Lopez alone is enough to get him in the conversation. Then all the other moves you brought up, Jack, just kind of keeps pushing him to the top, especially if they finish with the best record in NBA. Like, he's right up there to win the award.
All of these win-now moves. I mean, it's a fun time in the East. All these teams are just like, it's an arms race in the East in those top four teams. So now we're going to...
Well, before we go on, I was just going to say, we sort of touched on the Brogdon and Middleton free agency. Does this signing for you guys make it more likely or less likely that Chris Middleton will be in a Milwaukee Bucks uniform next season?
More. Because I think Middleton's the better player. So if you're re-signing Bledsoe, I don't think you're going to want to shake up the guy who actually just got done making his first ever All-Star team in Middleton. I think it just shows that they're going to have They're going to try to make a big three, I think, around those three guys.
Yeah, I think it's probably more likely. It just gives them insurance where if someone were to do something where maybe they get a crazy offer they don't want to match, they could be like, all right, we have at least one of our guys, and we have the option to bring back a couple guys. We didn't even bring up Mirotic, who's a guy that we don't know if they're going to bring him back. I believe they have his bird rights in that trade as well. So they have different options. Like I said, it kind of just allows them to focus on the other guys. We have Bledsoe wrapped up. Now we can just focus on what else is out there. What do we have to do?
I think his cap hold as well was something like $21 or $22 million. So he signed for under that in terms of the long-term money. So
that's big.
It is. It is. It certainly is. And I think that, I don't know, I think that Middleton might be more likely to leave based on this. Maybe I'm reading too much into some of the stuff that's happened during the season. There's been some frosty moments with Mike Budenholzer. That might be just me reading too much into it. But maybe just playing devil's advocate there. I think that, you know, maybe a team like the Lakers, a team like the Nets. There's plenty of teams that are going to have, you know, a bit of cap space, and they could do worse than signing a guy like Chris Middleton.
Yeah, you mentioned the relationship with Bud. I believe he was benched against the Knicks in a game that they lost in the fourth quarter or something along those lines. And also Middleton's the most likely out of all those guys to get a crazy offer. You know, you mentioned those teams, a team like the Knicks, if they strike out, they might want to bring in a guy like Middleton. Just a lot of different options, and there's going to be a lot of teams with cap space, and there's only so many true, you know, superstars and, you know, Middleton's a first-year All-Star, so a team could really go after him and throw a ton of money.
I think Middleton becomes really interesting this free agency. If we're on, like, day four or day five and a lot of these stars are already signed and he's still, like, you know, just hanging around out there, and like you said, the Lakers, maybe they strike out or the Knicks strike out, that's where a guy like Middleton definitely could get some money thrown out. But I actually really like Middleton's game. His length and versatility, you know, he can guard numerous positions, can shoot the three. He's an interesting guy on the market.
And he might want a bigger role. Like, even the relationship with Coach Bud, he hasn't been featured as much as he has in previous years. So maybe he's looking to expand his game and get in a bigger spotlight.
For sure. So next up, time to have some fun. First up game is hot take or shot fake. Now, some of these are a little dicey. Some of these may not even be that hot takey. First, Karl-Anthony Towns will – this is my own take, by the way. Karl-Anthony Towns will demand a trade but in the next 2 years. Hot take or shot fake.
This is why I prefer the Bucic Manuel scale, because it has some, you know, you can go along the sort of parabola and go, you don't have to go one way or the other, because I think that it's actually legitimate, Corey, because I've spoken about this on JBT with Nick, and I brought it up when there was sort of the you know, Jimmy Butler was still there, the whole Thibodeau saga of him playing ridiculous amounts of minutes, him not being able to get the best out of Karl-Anthony Towns. I think that Ryan Saunders has gotten unlocked a new level to him, especially following that crazy car accident. And you know, the fact that he has come back and has been so insane in his productivity has been amazing. So I will go shot fake, because I think that there is some legitimacy to it. And you know, I wouldn't mind him in Brooklyn.
Yeah, no, definitely. Obviously, him and D'Angelo are very good friends. That trio of him, Devin Booker and D'Lo, you know, three of the best friends in the NBA, I guess. I think it's a hot take. You know, I agree with Corey that, you know, within 2 years, the fact that you said 2 years, I think makes it more likely. If you said 1 year, I think I might be on the, you know, on the fence. But the fact is, like, they're going to have to move that Andrew Wiggins contract or keep him. And that just makes the cap situation in Minnesota so bad.
Before we move on. We are obviously very similar. We've got a trio right here, right now. Yes, trio man. Of those best friends right there. Who's Towns? Who's D'Lo? Who's Devin Booker? Shotgun, not Booker.
I don't want to be Booker. I guess I'm Booker. I'll allow it to be Booker. I guess I can score with the best of them, but I don't really like my own attitude, I guess.
I'll take D'Lo. I'll be happy with that.
I'll take the cat. I'm a big dude.
All right, it works. That's the big three officially. Next Bang. Up. These are some takes I had from the same game last night. Miles Turner is defensive player of the year. Hot take or shot fake? He had 6 blocks again last night. Yes, Towns scored 42 points on him. I get it. He's really good, but there you go.
Yeah, I think hot take because I think that there's just a couple of players who are probably above him. I still think Rudy Gobert is that minor notch above him. I think Paul George is. You can make an argument for Giannis as well. Miles Turner's easily top 5 in that sort of mark. So you could say shot fake, you could say hot take, but like I think that the nuance to it is that he's had an incredible defensive season, and he is one of the sole reasons why, along with Thaddeus Young, who I think goes under the radar quite a bit, they have been tremendous defensively, and their identity without Victor Oladipo hasn't taken a step back in that sense.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, Jack, I think you might get it backwards. Hot take is agree, shot fake is disagree.
Hot take is a great shot fake is this great. Cool, yeah. Got it.
But, I'm going to go with shot fake here. I think he's up for the conversation. I don't think he'll win it maybe after like another year of dominance. It feels like you have to earn the reputation and then the next season you win defensive player of the year. It's not like, all right, he's up for a candidate and he's going to lock it in. I just think other guys with respect around the league are going to get over him maybe next season though. And I've been impressed. And you could also argue that maybe Thad Young being in the conversation hurts his case.
Ooh, I would agree with that. Next up, Mitchell Robinson was drafted far too low in the NBA draft. Hot take or shot fake?
I'm going to go shot fake because I think with these sort of bigs, and you can sort of compare him to quite similarly to a Jared Allen, you just don't know what you're going to get out of him. Rudy Gobert as well. You know, there's obviously those comparisons between a lot of those sort of three players, Clint Capella. Those bigs generally go around that range because you'd rather take a flyer on a big, you know, late in the first round, early second round, than, you know, waste a top 5, top 10 pick on him with, like, you know, Alex Len, Dragon Bender, what's happened with those guys. And I think the franchises that have done that have seen success. You know, we've just talked about all those players. You know, Mitchell Robinson has potential to be, you know, either JaVale McGee, like, you know, just a really exciting shot blocker every now and then, or Rudy Gobert. So the how he is developed by David Fizdale is going to be a key. I think it's a shot fake. I don't think that he, you know, he's not a top 10. If you redraft, and, you know, we might do that with, you know, Dylan back and Dalton doing some things, maybe obviously would go up a lot higher. But I think it's too hard to forecast when you're sort of drafting and these prospects and such.
Yeah, I'm going to go shot fake too. I think if it was a redraft, he would definitely go in the first round. But based off of what we knew at the time when he was drafted, I believe he took time off from basketball as well. There's a lot of questions about him. I think he was drafted fairly. You know, a team took a risk on him and it worked out. And I like his game. I think he's going to be a really good player. But I think at the time it was the proper spot. But moving forward, if we did a redraft, he'd definitely be a first round pick.
I'm actually really excited about the fact, just before we go on, Corey, the fact that him and Jared Allen could be like dueling for the next 10, 15
Jared Allen's younger,
years.
To throw that out there.
Well, there we go. They're both 20-ish, but they're both incredibly talented. I think Jared Allen's obviously got a bit more on the offensive end, but Mitchell Robinson has been absolutely insane. You know, he's featured a few times in Rookie Watch and JBT, and he's been one of the real standouts for the Knicks in their poor season. And when they've been winning in this recent streak, Mitchell Robinson has been a key feature, if not one of the best players on that sort of roster.
For sure. Two more left. Trae Young will win Rookie of the Year. Hot take or shot fake?
Come on, bro. Really?
Not all of these are mine. Not all of these takes are mine.
You sure? You sure you just didn't want to
like... This one's not mine. I saw this on Twitter. This one's not mine.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it's not yours because you said he would be out of the league in 7 years. So it's
damn
clearly
it, Jack.
Not yours.
Let me live.
No, it's clearly shot fake. It's going to be the Don, but... He has been on a tear, Luka Doncic. Not Luka Doncic, Trae Young. Luka Doncic has been as well. But I think that we, and I was one that wasn't as big as like Bill Simmons and this being like the worst trade. It'll be like the Celtics trade with the Sixers for Jason Tatum and Markelle Fultz. I was actually like, you know what? I think this could actually work out well for the Atlanta Hawks in terms of them, you know, trading down to get Trae Young and get that extra first rounder. I think that it's going to work out well for both parties. And I think that Trae Young will probably finish second. Jaren Jackson obviously being out for the rest of the season with that quad injury. He's obviously lost his chance. I'm not sure who's really third in that race. I think it's almost those two. And then, you know, a few other guys, you can argue Colin Sexton and a heap of other dudes that probably aren't in the same sort of rookie echelon, but they've still had plenty of impact on their respective teams. And I've liked, you know, Marvin Bagley as well, but his injury, like you guys talked about on the outlet, is a little bit disappointing too.
Yeah, I agree. I think shot fake, I think he made up some major ground though. Like, you know, in the beginning of the year or the first half of the season, we're like, you know, his passing is great, his shooting is off. Now his shooting is catching up. Now he's opening up his game even more. You know, if he were to have an extremely crazy month of March and then finish off, you know, early April, he could possibly get in the conversation to really take some votes and make it a close race. But I think Luka just had so much hype in the beginning of the year and he continues to have it. And obviously he's done a lot and Dallas is a better team than Atlanta. I think Luka's a lock to win it, but it's a lot closer than I think we would have said 2 months ago.
For sure.
Yeah, Corey, are we addressing questions from the chat here?
Yeah, of course.
All right. Well, it looks like we've got a Brooklyn Buzz listener because he says, Crazy Dean, if available, should the Nets sign Kyrie or Jimmy Butler, or do you think they will mess with the team's chemistry?
You guys want to answer this first? It's your team.
You go first, and then me and Jack will go
okay.
After.
Personally, I wouldn't go after Kyrie Irving only because I have D'Lo, who's very young, Caris LeVert at the guard position as well, and Spencer Dinwiddie. I mean, obviously, Spencer Dinwiddie, I think you would move on from if you're getting Kyrie Irving, but I think D'Lo has shown enough this year in particular. Like, why would you want to move on? Kyrie Irving's kind of been a head case in the media. I mean, the circus that he's caused for Boston has not helped any of their struggles. Jimmy Butler would be interesting. I mean, for me, just like where his age is compared to where the rest of the Nets are, does he kind of fit in with the timeline? His injury history is a little concerning depending on the minutes. I think he's probably more of a fit. I think I would like him a little bit better than I would like Irving. But that's all based on how D'Lo and these guys finish out the year too.
Yeah, I think, you know, even Bill Simmons brought this up that he might prefer D'Angelo Russell over Kyrie. Like, it's a conversation right now, especially considering D'Angelo just turned 23. He's not at the peak of his career. His contract's going to be nicer. It's going to be lower. It might be a max, but it's not going to be the same max as Kyrie due to the years of experience in the NBA. Then you mentioned Kyrie's kind of been a head case in, you know, the Celtics locker room, you know, putting the blame on some of the young guys and also the knee injury. I think I would stick with D'Lo. Jimmy Butler, Jack and I kind of slightly talked about this in the DMs. You know, Butler, I would take on a short-term deal. If they were able to get him for like a two-year deal at a high amount, I'd be okay with that. But long-term, I'm not investing money in Jimmy Butler, especially with all those minutes. And then the attitude, like, I want to be able to get rid of him if I have to. And if you were to sign him to like a 4 or 5 year deal, I think that's scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just to add on top of what Nick said, just to change it up a little bit, I think I would go 3 years with Jimmy Butler. I think that he is still a top 15, top 20 player. And on his day, he can push for that sort of top 10 range. You know, Corey and I are going to be debating about that plenty when we are putting out the top 50 very, very soon. But I would go that extra year for Jimmy Butler. I think that he fits better, like Corey said as well. We need a wing like no other. We need a really good wing like no other. And in terms of Kyrie Irving, the thing that sticks out to me, and I think a lot of people have sort of touched on this, he doesn't seem coachable. In terms of the history of coaches he's had under him at this stage of his career, he's meshed with one sort of in David Blatt. And D'Angelo Russell has proven to be a coachable player. And it is a reason, a key reason for his success. Whereas Kyrie Irving under Coach Kenny, I mean, Brad Stevens is, you know, he has this reputation as being a great coach. So if he can't sort of, you know, pull the reins in a guy like Kyrie Irving, can Coach Kenny? I mean, I would back him in to do that if it were to somehow happen, you know, if you get Kyrie Irving on the cheap or whatever might happen. But I just don't see, like, I think D'Angelo Russell, you know, being a few years younger, his injury history isn't amazing, but it's probably better than Kyrie at this stage of his career. So, yeah, I'd go D'Lo, but then Jimmy Butler on a three-year, you know, $30 million deal, I wouldn't hate if we were to give that to him, especially if, you know, other teams, and he were to take some unders with us and he were to buy into the system. I actually think that Jimmy Butler would fit well. I'm a bit higher on him than a lot of others.
The one thing I can add to that, too, is, like, at this point, the conversation initially with D'Lo was he's not a leader. I think D'Lo has already kind of shown he's a better leader than Kyrie Irving at this point of his career. I mean, I don't know how much stock we can really put into that because of the situation and the expectations, obviously, for both teams are different. But, I mean, D'Lo has kind of embraced a leadership role where Kyrie is kind of, like, embracing but at the same time, like, doesn't really want it, it feels like.
Yeah, I think D'Lo is taking more responsibility for, you know, getting benched or not getting minutes or something. He, you know, puts full confidence in his coach, or something bad happens for the Celtics. Kyrie is like, you know, the young guys, or we saw him got mad at Gordon Hayward because he didn't get the ball against Orlando in that late game situation. So I think there's a fair argument there.
I certainly agree with that, Corey. I think that D'Lo takes criticism and uses it to improve upon himself, whereas Kyrie deflects criticism and puts it on other people. It never seems to be Kyrie's fault. And I'm a big Kyrie Irving fan. And that's not to say that, you know, he's not an amazing player and, you know, one of the most clutch players we've seen in the past sort of decade. But D'Angelo Russell has bought in his other players. And, you know, he's been able to take on, you know, a guy like Damari Carroll has gone to him, you know, we need you right now. And in that Cleveland Cavaliers game, we need you to step up. And he goes bang and just goes off. Whereas, you know, I think Kyrie Irving early in the season is like, we need more vets or whatever. Maybe if they had that one Damari Carroll sort of type who was in sort of Kyrie Irving's ear, it's just like, dude, we need you to step up now. You need to communicate with these guys better. Maybe we'd see a different version of Kyrie Irving. I'm not 100% sure. Maybe Danny Ainge and the Boston Celtics need to look into that if they are going to keep him long-term in terms of their roster sort of fit. Because right now, I don't think we're seeing the best version of Kyrie Irving, despite, you know, his individual talents.
Yeah, it sounds like Kyrie spent a little bit too much time with LeBron James, maybe. Okay, last hot take a shot fake. James Harden is the best player in the NBA. I saw it on Twitter. I have to let it out.
The best player as in?
Like, in the NBA currently. He's the best player in the NBA currently.
Or based off of this season?
I think it's based off this season, but people are asking, is he the best player in the NBA as of right now?
It's a shot fake because I'll probably have Giannis over him this season. I would have Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry, LeBron James, maybe not at this stage in terms of this season especially. And you can make an argument for Paul George. So I would have him top three, top four, but I don't think he's the best player in the NBA. No chance.
I don't think he – I mean, it's a weird question because if we're talking about actual talent, like who's the best player, who's performing the best this season, I think you could definitely make an argument for James Harden. Like he's had more 50-point games. Corey, I think you tweeted this out. Than like anybody else in the NBA combined.
Yeah, he's got six already.
Like nobody has to carry their team more to wins. Like they just beat the Heat yesterday. He scored, what, 58? They were down 21. So I think when he turns it on, he can be the best player in the NBA. Like when he's on and hitting that step back three, you could argue there's maybe no one tougher to defend, especially the way he's able to draw fouls. But if we're talking like actual talent and like who's the best player, he's not the best player. But on certain nights, I think he can be the best player in the NBA.
Yeah, I ask this question again in April, May. And then if James Harden is still putting up 50-point games, you know, he was across – I did a piece for Beckett Basketball. Across, you know, the first games of playoff series, he's been tremendous. You know, I think all of last year's playoffs, he had 40-point games in every game won. And then he tapered off quite a bit. He had his games here and there. So I think if he can maintain consistency, and with Chris Paul showing some nice production as well, I think that he has potential to change the narrative on him in the playoffs, similar to a Paul George who I think has – after last sort of playoff P is like just the worst nickname ever. Yeah, you know, Joe Ingles outplaying you, bro. Come on, man. So I always value that. And Kevin Durant, you know, Stephen Curry might have the finals MVP, but I think Kevin Durant for me right now is probably the best player in the NBA. That might be a hot take in itself.
Yeah. Go ahead, Corey.
I'm just saying, I'm right there with you. I don't think he's the best player in the NBA. I do think he's the second best player in the NBA. I think I have him number two. I think I still have Kevin Durant first and Antetokounmpo third, if we're talking about, like, the grand scheme of the league. Not that I'm giving away hints for the top 50 list at all. But I think he's not the best player yet. And that's, to me, I don't know. I guess I kind of do way too much into, like, the playoff picture as well, because I really haven't seen Harden do it on the biggest stage. There's been moments where he's kind of, you know, dimmed down. But no, go ahead, Nick. Finish off.
Well, just to get on some of Jack's point, I agree. I think like the fact that he tailors off in the end of series, it could be something on him, but I also think it could be something on like he's just getting fatigued, especially because he runs so much isolation. They have the ball in his hand so much. Like maybe they need to get him a break and be like, all right, maybe chill out for like game one, two, and three, and then really turn on in game seven. I think, you know, obviously the playoffs are what really determine your legacy.
For sure. All right, now last game. Now this one's a little bit – we had a good call on Nick to make this a multiple choice game. We're doing guess the line, multiple choice. There's five of these. You guys are going head-to-head. You get one guess each. I guess we'll rotate questions because we could just yell them out, I guess.
Yeah.
So first up, 10 points per game, 6.9 rebounds per game, 2.1 assists per game on shooting splits of 56% and 25%. Is it A, Wendell Carter Jr.? Is it B, Willie Cauley-Stein? Is it C, Cody Zeller? Or is it D, Tristan Thompson? I had to throw Tristan in there.
Jackson A.
Yeah, Jack's wrong.
Damn.
Could you repeat the stat line one more time?
Oh, come on. 10 points per game.
There's nothing wrong with being patient, Jack.
10 points per game, 6.9 rebounds per game, 2.1 assists per game on shooting splits of 56 and 25. It is not Wendell Carter Jr. Is it B, Willie Cauley-Stein, C, Cody Zeller, or D, Tristan Thompson?
And what were the – did you say the blocks or no?
I did not say the blocks.
Oh, okay. That would give it away.
How much more information do you need? Jesus.
Let's go with Cody Zeller.
Yeah, you were right. It was Cody. Yeah. It was Cody Zeller. All right, so 1-0 Nick, the birthday guy. Next up, this one's a little bit harder. 19.5 points per game, 9.5 rebounds per game on shooting splits of 56 and 37. I'm not giving you guys a lot of stats because you're getting four choices.
Yeah.
A, Julius Randle. B, John Collins. C, Serge Ibaka. D, Al Horford. And the line again is 19.5 points per game, 9.5 rebounds per game on shooting splits of 56 and 37.
And say the names one more time.
Julius Randle. A, Julius Randle. B, John Collins. C, Serge Ibaka. D, Al Horford.
A, Julius Randle.
B.
It's B. It's John Collins. But Julius Randle and John Collins, the only difference is Randle averages 20 points per game. John Collins is 19. So, like, it was really I had to, like, make these a little bit challenging.
That was a good one. That's a really good stat. I mean, I knew it wasn't Serge or Al Horford because of the rebounding.
Yeah. Next up, I want to say the guy's name. 8.3 points per game, 3.0 rebounds per game, 4.0 assists per game on shooting splits of 40 and 35. Is it A, Marcus Smart, B, Tyreke Evans, C, Gary Harris, or D, Derek White?
B.
A.
A, it's Marcus Smart.
I thought he was shooting better from three then. I'm not good at this game. Should I just go, guys? You guys can just do your own thing, or what's going on? I'll get ready for the next game.
Well, Jack, if you get the next two right, I got to make a last one up. All right.
Then it will just be tied.
Yeah, well, what is this, the NFL? We end games and ties is the NBA. Yeah. All right, so next up, we have 14.1 points per game, 6.4 rebounds per game, 2.7 assists per game on shooting splits of 41.2 and 42.2. Is it A, Lou Williams, B, Buddy Hield, C, Jordan Clarkson, or D, Rudy Gay?
B, Buddy Hield.
Can you give me the choices one more time? Tell me A and C.
A is Lou Williams. C is Jordan Clarkson. B is Buddy Hield. D is Rudy Gay. The stat line is 14.1 points per game, 6.4 rebounds per game, 2.7 assists per game.
Can I change my answer?
Jordan Clarkson?
Yes. It's not Jordan Clarkson. Yes, Jack. What is your final answer? Lock it in.
What?
Rudy Gay.
Yes. Jack's on the board. 2-1. All right. Last one. This is kind of challenging. 7.2 points per game, 3.7 rebounds per game, 4.0 assists per game on shooting splits of 44 and 36. Is it A, Corey Joseph, B, Tony Parker, C, Shelvin Mack, or D, Jeremy Lin?
Splits one more time. Sorry. I'm terrible.
The shooting splits are 44 and 36. Oh, no, 44 and 33. Apologize. And he averages 7.2 points per game, 3.7 rebounds per game, and 4.0 assists.
And what was A and B?
A was Corey Joseph. B was Tony Parker.
A.
It's Corey Joseph.
It's Corey. You know it's got to be a Pacer guy, Jack.
Yeah, that's true.
I had to get one in there.
He always does.
All right, so Nick, he's demoralized. He's upset.
A little bit.
So Nick wins on the day after his birthday game, and that's it for the games. That's it.
You know, those two. Birthdays bring wisdom.
Birthdays bring wisdoms. Well,
all right, then I'm pretty sure I'm still older than both of you.
Well, you are. I'm a baby. I'm a guppy. I'm young out here.
This is weird. This is going to sound really weird. I had a dream last night, Corey, that you were 37 years old for some reason. I don't know what the context was, but for some reason...
You're not aging well, Corey. That's what he's trying to tell you.
Shit.
I mean, you was aging well because you looked exactly the same, but you were 37 years old. So I was
Now, next question. You're dreaming about me?
Of course, man. Always. Nothing but dreams about OTG and the staff.
So, obviously, we still got some time before the game starts. So, question for you guys, because the Nets have a very important game tonight. Well, not very important, but a somewhat important playoff race implication game. They're playing their Charlotte Hornets. What are some of your guys' expectations? Spencer Dinwiddie will be making his return. I know this is not the broken buzz, but since I got the broken buzz here, I might as well ask some playoff battle scenarios.
Jack, you want to...
Yeah, I put out some questions on Twitter, and for me, they're just things that I'm going to be watching for, and we'll probably revisit in the live post-gamer. How many minutes is Dinwiddie going to play? Caris LeVert with the bobblehead night. It was in my trending that it said NBA player gets 0 points in
bobblehead night. Rondo didn't even play on his bobblehead night.
I was just like, all right. Why did this call
like,
him?
I was pissed. I was like, yo, do not throw shade at my boy after he's coming back from his freaking foot hanging off his leg and you're trying to criticize him for having a bad game.
The thing for me was that they called him generic NBA player. Like, I'm just like, call him my, just Caris LeVert gets 0 points in his NBA bobblehead night. Like, he's a good player. He's most, it was just very annoying. And Jack, whatever his name is, the bloke who's married to Serena Williams, you're going to be hearing from me very soon, as will Nick. And then also, Spencer, who does he usurp in the rotation? You know, does that mean Shabazz Napier gets no minutes? Are they going to try three ball handlers? What's going to be going on there? And the closing lineup, because there's been some pretty tough games between these two teams, and I think it's going to be pretty heated again tonight, obviously at home. So there's going to be plenty to watch for, and I think it's going to be one of the games, like we talked about it in the last one of this game, it's one of the games of the season for the Nets. So it's going to be certainly very, very hard fought.
Yeah, it's a good test for them. It's a game that actually has some pressure to it. I think they've recently just had one, I forget who they were just playing, where it actually mattered. And this is a tiebreaker right here. If the Nets win this game, they'll have a tiebreaker against the Hornets, which pretty much means they'll be four games up on them. They'll actually be four games up if they win. They'll be pretty much, you know, a half a game up on them because they'll have the tiebreaker. I think, obviously, Dinwiddie coming back, one thing I think is really positive, it was just his thumb. Conditioning-wise, he's fine. Kenny already said that he's going to play the back-to-back. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm interested to see where his minutes come. I think Shabazz is probably going to lose most of his minutes, if not all of them. And I think one key to this game that I'm going to keep an eye on is how the Nets defend, you know, pick and roll, screens and whatnot, because Kemba and Tony Parker definitely got plenty of mid-range shots and knocked them down last game. Even Kemba off three-point shots. So getting around screens for the Nets guards is going to be huge tonight.
We defended him so well in that first half of the – sorry, Corey. We defended him so well in the first half of the last game. So, like, if we can maintain that consistency and, you know, defensive engagement, I think we'll be okay. And, you know, we've talked about it at length in terms of how, you know, the guards fight through the pick and roll. I think Caris LeVert will obviously play a role in that. And I think, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie getting in, does hopefully it opens up looks for guys like Alan Crabb and Joe Harris, you know, spaces that floor that little bit more. And, you know, D'Angelo Russell has just been on fire. And, you know, if we saw, you know, the budding chemistry between Spencer and D'Lo, then Spencer got injured. Now we're starting to see the budding chemistry with Caris LeVert and D'Lo. And then, you know, Spencer, how does that affect that chemistry? Are all three going to play at the same time tonight? That's, for me, is going to be one thing I'll watch for as well. Are all three going to be on the floor at once? Do the minutes get staggered? I know Nick's mentioned that in response to my questions. Coach Kenny, this is the healthiest the Nets have been this season. I think Puccio
since
put
last
out.
Last year, the healthiest they've been since Jeremy Lin.
2017.
Yeah.
So Pooch put that one out. So it's been a long, long, long time. And it's a good time to be healthy because this is where we really need it. The Detroit Pistons are really hot. You know, Andre Drummond, Corey and I have been debating about him in the top 50 as well. He's been on a tear. Blake Griffin has had one of probably the best seasons of his career. So it's going to be a hard-fought race, and these are the games that we need to win. And Coach Kenny mentioned in the pregame as well, the players understand that. So hopefully that motivation can translate to, you know, a four-quarter performance.
In a really poor performance against Washington, I might expect them to come back out, bounce back with some energy. And in touch on what Jack was mentioning, I would expect us to see Caris, D'Lo, and Dinwiddie at least for a couple minutes. I don't know if we'll see them for, you know, a long stretch, but he did like to play them together early in the year just to kind of get a feel for that, you know, arguably the Nets' three best players. So if you can get them to have some nice chemistry, that'd be huge.
definitely. Now, for everyone listening, be sure to check out the Brooklyn Buzz following that game. Nick and Jack will be going live to discuss what happens in that game. Hopefully, D'Lo goes off. Hopefully, Spencer has a nice return. And hopefully, Jack doesn't dance like that live on that show. Two more questions.
You can't, when there's two people on, you can't see it when the other person's doing stupid things. But when there's three, I like to do more stupid things. You can see me down at the bottom right-hand corner.
Fair enough. Now, last two questions before we get on out of here. We actually didn't talk about this. Pau Gasol being bought out by the Spurs. Does that mean the Spurs are going for the playoffs still? Does that mean the Spurs are looking to take a step back?
I think that Jakob Poeltl has been better in their rotation anyway, and the fact that he has finally sort of solidified his spot as that sort of second big behind, you know, LaMarcus, it just proves that. I think that I don't think the Gasol leaving or buyout indicates necessarily anything, because they're going to continue that streak. I think that they are still in a better spot than the Lakers, probably the Clippers, maybe not the Clippers, because who knows what could happen with them at the end of the season, and the Kings as well because of their records. But I think that the Spurs are in a fine spot to stay in the seventh or eighth seed. I prefer them seventh because I'd rather the Kings get the eighth, and so they have a 1-8 matchup with the Golden State Warriors. But I think that this move doesn't necessarily indicate any sort of indication of where they want to, quote-unquote, you know, tank out of the playoffs.
I agree. I don't think they're trying to tank out of the playoffs. I think it was just like, you know, Pau, we're not going to give you any minutes. You know, Milwaukee might give you a few. We're not going to give you any. Like Jack was saying, Poeltl's kind of found his role there. So I don't think that they're going to try to miss the playoffs.
And to be noted, also tonight, the Clippers and Kings also play tonight. That obviously is a big playoff implication game. Last question. The Boston Celtics currently are riding a four-game losing streak. They play the Washington Wizards tonight. They had the longest losing streak currently in the NBA. Does it go to five games or does it end tonight?
I would absolutely love it, with the history that these two teams have, if this version, like literally version of the Washington Wizards team, would beat the Boston Celtics. It would almost be like a reversal of roles. That would turn into, you know, the calamitous situation that is happening in Washington right now. I mean, it's already pretty bad there in Boston. I mean, if we've ever heard of must-win scenarios, If Brad Stevens could be under the hot seat if they somehow lose this game. I don't know. It could be funny. But I expect the Boston Celtics to have a pretty comfortable win.
Yeah, I think the Celtics will win. I think they're too good of a team to lose five straight. Obviously, chemistry is a huge issue. Washington played really well last game. I don't think they're a consistent team, so I don't expect them to play well. But quick question for you guys. Has this season hurt Brad Stevens' reputation as a coach? I know last year people were saying, oh, I would take him over any player in the NBA, or he's the best coach. What are your thoughts on him now after a season like this so far?
Not in relation to the X's and O's, but yes, in relation to man management. Because last season, he didn't have to manage a star. He had to manage, you know, Terry Rozier. He had to manage Jaylen Brown, these guys who are hungry and motivated and, you know, developing them. Now he has to manage a Kyrie Irving. And I don't know how many coaches, we sort of touched on it earlier, are equipped to sort of deal with that sort of man management when it comes to coaching. I think that that is, you know, a key thing. And, you know, Steve Kerr, and in terms of what he's been able to do and managing this sort of big three, big four over there, is something that you have to marvel at. And so I think in relation to that, yes, he's not the famed Brad Stevens who you would take over any player in the Eastern Conference. Shout out to Chris Mannix for that stupid piece of shit. but yeah,
it does. And I almost got fired before.
I'm not gonna do it. The S word isn't as bad as other things. You've said it a million times, Corey.
I know. I had to make a joke. Definitely back to the Brad Stevens question. I got to recuperate. He's definitely like you. I think you made a great point, Jack. You know, we saw him last year coach a bunch of kids realistically, and nobody with a huge ego, no star. So we got to see him really have control over the roster. And when you have a star in a guy like Kyrie Irving, obviously Hayward too is now back, and you're trying to manage egos. You got the expectations and things aren't going your way. I think he's still a good X and O coach, but as you said, I don't think he's great with big egos. I don't think he knows. I don't think Brad Stevens demands respect from a guy like Kyrie necessarily. And I'm not saying that's, I got no idea if that's true or not. You know, that's, but even just some of the questions with Kyrie Irving post game, where, you know, they have asked him, what do you think about blah, blah, blah. He's got, oh, it's Brad Stevens' job. And like certain, just like snippets like that to me are like jabs at the head coach. So I think he's definitely lowered. I think he's probably still a top 10, maybe number five in top five coaches, but I don't think he'd be in my top three as of right now.
Yeah, I think Jack, you know, great point. X's and O's, I don't think it's changed on him. Like, he still runs some great sets and plays. Also, the players just haven't executed. But in terms of managing personalities, I think he's taken, you know, an L in that category this year. Not only just Kyrie, because Kyrie played most of last season. Like, he did miss a big chunk, but he played a lot of the season. I think it's, you know, bringing Gordon Hayward. Now you have all these personalities, and there's only so many minutes, and you have a talented roster. It's like, he hasn't been able to find that combination. He still has time, obviously, if they win a chip or they even go to the finals or have a really good Eastern Conference finals. You know, we'll forget all about this conversation. But if they don't, I think it brings up some questions about his ability to manage relationships.
Do you guys think Gordon Hayward's a Trump supporter?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that's that low key, I think that plays into locker room dynamics. And I think with a guy like Jaylen Brown, who's a bit of a forward thinker. Kyrie Irving is a forward thinker, if we can put him that way. I think that that messes with things. And, you know, Gordon Hayward just wants to go home to his kids and play some video games, whereas I think locker room dynamics speak volumes to success. They've still, like, I think they're still, like, top four in net rating, top five in net rating, which is insane because of all the L's that they've taken in terms of the win-loss scenario. But yeah, the locker room dynamic situation right there, a lot of it has to be sort of placed on, you know, not just Kyrie Irving, but Brad Stevens.
Yeah, and I think you look at it this way is, let's be honest, Hayward has not been good this year. You know, he's not been a great player. He's taken minutes away from guys that probably are playing better than him. And he's Brad Stevens' guy from college. So now, like, you look at it as like, oh, he's playing favorites. He's wanting Gordon Hayward to do this when maybe he doesn't necessarily deserve those minutes. And it's just a weird situation because they had so much success last year without Hayward.
I didn't even think about the political aspect that something like that could have on a locker room. I'm really hoping Gordon Hayward's not a Trump supporter, but
his wife donated to Trump's campaign or whatever. Like,
that's not good.
Yeah, and then I think the whole dynamic. You know, most years politics don't matter, but the way that Donald Trump is just a terrible president doing all these things, like, anybody who's in the NBA is probably offended if you're supporting Donald Trump. It's not just like the Celtics locker room; it's probably almost every locker room in the NBA.
For sure, especially how he's come after certain guys in the NBA, like LeBron James. You know, he's obviously come at him. That's an interesting dynamic that could actually have a major effect. I didn't even think about that, Jack. Good point.
Yeah, so I think Jack coming with the heat.
So I think that's going to wrap it up for this live edition of the NBA Outlet. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at OTG Basketball. Check out the brand at OTGBasketball.com. Follow us, subscribe to us on iTunes, YouTube, Block Talk Radio. You can follow me on Twitter at K-Wall Hoops, K-W-A-L Hoop. You can follow Nick on Twitter at OTG underscore Nick. You can follow Jack on Twitter at the J-Man JBT. Anything else you guys want to plug?
No, Corey, I just want to give you a shout out for nailing the outro.
Yeah, you know, nice.
I've heard it, what, 160 times now, so I think I should be pretty good at it.
All right, guys, great show. That wraps it up. And be sure to check us out, like Corey said, on all those platforms. And Jack and I will be going live for the Brooklyn Buzz post game.